Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics include what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization Toward the Light and this radio program, please do visit our websites, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. This week I'm very pleased to have someone who's had very special after-death communications, actually as the result of losing her own daughter 1 week after her 20th birthday. So we're going to find out some very exciting information here indeed about life continuum. Let us welcome to Toward the Light is Kimberly Wenzel. Welcome, Kimberly. Hello.
Hi, Juliet. Great to be here.
Well, it's lovely to have you on Toward the Light. I've really been looking forward to this because I'm a mum myself, although gratefully my daughter is still on this side. But there was one day that many people will remember where I was wondering if I had lost her also, and that was on 11 September 2001 when she was in Manhattan.
Oh, boy, yeah.
So needless to say, I've definitely stressed the importance of telepathy, whether it be with somebody on this side or on the other side. And, of course, after-death communications is a powerful point in case about telepathy taking place. So why don't we start a little bit with your background, Kim. I know that you were stating that you've always been interested in metaphysics.
Yes.
But you hadn't had direct experience, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, that's right. I've always been fascinated by, near-death experiences. I remember back in the 70s when Raymond Moody came out with his book, Life After Life, and I read it and read it and read it, and I was just fascinated by it. And then I think it was 2001 when I first heard about the phenomenon of spirit communication, and that equally fascinated me. And I remember thinking when I first started to hear about John Edward, and he had a television show called Crossing Over, and I started to watch that, and I remember thinking to myself, boy, if I ever lost someone close to me, I sure would want to find someone like that or be on that show. And my daughter was home that summer quite ill with mononucleosis, and so she was a captive audience, and I tried to get her to watch that show with me because I thought it was just so fascinating, and I thought she would find it fascinating. But she watched it once, and she would never watch it again, and I could never figure out if she just wasn't interested or she didn't believe it. But it doesn't really matter, because the important thing was in all of that is that she knew from that point on that I truly believed in that type of thing. And I think that played a really large part later on when she did cross over herself, making the connection back to me.
Well, that's very interesting. I want to ask you this. Did you perchance have any premonitions that something was pending?
Not consciously at the time, but when I look back, I did have two things that happened that now I realize after the fact were. And one of those, the first one was I have two daughters, and I would always take them shopping for clothes before the start of each school year. And so in late August of 2003, I took my daughter shopping, but there was a very good chance that I was going to lose my job at that point, and I really questioned whether we should go shopping because, if I'm going to lose my job, we shouldn't. But in the end, I thought, well, you know what? Nothing is for sure yet. And we just went and we had a fabulous day. And I really am not a shopper, but, Liz, my oldest daughter, is a voracious shopper, so I knew it would be an all-day thing, but we just had a wonderful time. But I said to both the girls several times that day, you'd better enjoy this, girls, because this may be the last time we ever do this. And what I thought I meant when I said that was that if I lost my job down the road, we wouldn't have money to go shopping.
Yes.
But then, you know, 3 weeks later, Liz died, and then looking back sometime after that, I realized that some part of me knew that we were not going to be shopping again, but it wasn't because I was going to lose my job, because I didn't, but it was because Liz was going to leave. So that was the first one. And the second premonition that I had was on September 1st, 2003, when we actually moved her into her apartment. And it was a very hot holiday, Labor Day here, and we moved her in, and she was her bedroom was on the second floor, and we got her mattress and everything up there. And I said, well, I'll, you know, put the sheets on the bed, and she and her dad continued to bring things in. So I was alone in her bedroom, and I remember finishing up with the sheets and the bedspread. And when I got done, I didn't know why I did it, but I pushed her bed up against the wall as close as I could get it. And there was a big double window on that wall. And I remember just standing there for a minute or so and just looking out that window. And I remember thinking to myself, if anything ever happens, she can always jump out that window. And, of course, that was just a passing thought. But then, of course, mm-hmm. you know, later on I realized, oh, my goodness. And the ironic thing about that was she was in her bed when the fire broke out, and that window was literally inches from her, but she was not able to get to it.
Yeah, and that was something that had me curious, and I read your powerful testimony in Messages from Beyond.
Uh-huh.
And tell me the author's name of that book who compiled all of that.
Yeah, her name is Julie Idlott.
Idlott, okay. Okay. Really beautiful reading that, and of course I'm a mum, and my daughter is also a Virgo, through and through, planets in Virgo. In fact, I'm ecstatic that we just celebrated her 45th birthday on 16 September, so it's just a few days different from your daughter's birthday.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's interesting, again, being a mum, having these thoughts go through our heads and wondering what is a premonition or what is just being common sense.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's how interesting that is. And I find myself really paying attention. And it's ironic that, you know, I have been, for some reason, really focusing on my daughter. You know, she's traveled to California. She's there now. She's not home. And how odd that normally we've been talking about with my health being so ill. Goodness me, I could transition at any moment. But then the thought that none of us want to face is, well, what if our children leave before we do?
Mm-hmm.
And then really searching myself, because I've just been feeling so funny, but I've been feeling funny anyway because there's so much in the air right now.
Uh-huh.
Going on everywhere, you know, and I'm thinking about people I love, and then I'm thinking about all of these aspects, and then I'm thinking about my daughter traveling, and I thought, well, what if it happened the other way? And I hadn't really had these thoughts hit me so strongly since, as Americans call it, 9/11.
Right.
When I really was facing, oh, God, being alone in America without my daughter.
Right.
Being alone in the world without my daughter, because she's all I've thought.
Uh-huh.
And so, interestingly, reading your testimony and being in touch with you has just brought all of this back to me. And, of course, I do deal with people who have ABCs and have lost their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know what, just because we're older, that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to leave before they do. Their soul's contract may just be to have a very, very brief visit on this plane, and then, boom, they're gone.
Yeah, I have really come to believe that, you know, that my daughter and I agreed to this before we both came into this life, and she left early so that, and then all of the things that happened, happen so that I could share them with everybody else.
And you know what tremendous peace of mind this kind of stuff is offering people. And it's such a tremendous gift, even though it's difficult, I know.
It's a huge gift, and I feel totally honored to, you know, to have all of these experiences. And so I feel, you know, it's my privilege to talk about them and share them with as many people as I can.
Well, that's really wonderful. Now, one question I was curious about, and perhaps you've never been able to get the answer to this, is did you ever find out, were you ever able to find out why your daughter couldn't respond or jump out of the window? Do you actually know what happened?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, they went to a whole day of classes. This was Friday, September 19th, 2003. She was at the University of Minnesota. So she and her roommates went to class all day. Then I had actually given her, as part of her birthday present, 4 tickets to the professional hockey team we have here in Minnesota, the Minnesota Wild. And that game was that night. So they went to that game. And then when that was done, they went over to, drove over to just across the border into the state of Wisconsin to one of the roommate's parents and partied there for a while and then came back to their apartment about 2 a.m. and then sat outside on their porch until approximately 4 a.m. and partied. And so, you know, they were virtually up for almost 24 hours and had been, you know, drinking alcoholic beverages and smoking and partying, and they all went to bed. And the cause of the fire has never been officially determined, but one of the firemen did tell one of the other parents that they're fairly certain that it was, you know, a careless cigarette that was not put out that started the couch on fire. And it was a very, very old house, and it was a wooden porch. And so, you know, once that flame started, it moved very quickly. And so, and Liz and Amanda shared a bedroom, and they did not shut their bedroom door when they went to bed. So, of course, their room immediately filled with smoke. And they were both found on the floor next to their bed. So my feeling is that they did wake up, but they were so overcome immediately that they were just down and gone.
Wow.
Very quickly.
And not even in bed at that?
No, no. I mean, they were at one point, but I do think they did wake up and try to get out, but were overcome immediately.
Yes, yes. That's interesting because, of course, you know, people try to think of ways to have an environment be safe for someone, and then you just never know when there'll be some little glitch, and all you can deduce is, well, that was just meant to be. And
I do a lot right. Well, I do what I can now to really talk to college students, and after the fire, you know, the city of Minneapolis stepped in and the college, and they did a sweep of all the off-campus housing because there's a lot of violations, and the housing is not as safe as it could be. So they've tried to crack down on that, but I really like to speak to the students and, you know, tell them that, you know, when you move out on your own like that, you are responsible for your own personal safety. And, you know, there's that mentality at that age is that they're invincible. And,
yeah,
stuff like that happens to other people, but it doesn't happen to me. But it does.
Indeed. It really can do. Now, when she'd crossed over, and, of course, that's very, very hard, even though we know that the individual still continues to live and to have one's identity intact and everything else,
right,
this individual has changed form, so we miss that physical hug. I mean, even when I would see my daughter at the airport, it was, oh, my goodness, and I would cry, you know, because she wouldn't be around where we could just reach out and give each other a hug or share a pot of tea together. It's always hard to say goodbye and have someone close proximity to us. But since this did happen and she did transition to another dimension and took on another form, what did you notice happening as regards the ADCs or after-death communications? What started happening that you noticed?
Well, first of all, you know, of course it was shocking and everything that you would think that it would be when you lose someone so suddenly and so tragically. It was all of that. But underneath all of that, I had this calmness and peace and serenity that I don't know where it came from, but I knew it came from God. And even though it was, you know, those first days and weeks were the most difficult thing I've ever gone through and probably ever will go through, underneath that, I knew that God was in control of this situation. I knew that Liz was fine. I knew that I would be fine, my family would be fine, and we would get through this. But then, through the first week of her death, three different people got a sign from her, and I found out about all of them. And then I actually realized sometime later down the road that she had given me one in that first week also, but I didn't pick it up and I didn't put it together until a couple of months later.
Now feel free to share those signs, because these are all wonderful examples of how people do reach to us from the other
side. Okay, well, first of all, the day after she died, we had to go, of course, make the arrangements for the funeral home, for the funeral, and that was just incredibly difficult. That was one of the most difficult things that I had to do throughout the whole thing. And as we were sitting there making these plans, it dawned on me that, you know, she had moved everything with her when she left our house. And I'm thinking, okay, there's no clothing for her to be buried in, and I'm going to have to go out and buy something for her. And, you know, and I had just taken her shopping like 3 weeks prior and spent all this money on her, and she was just a, you know, she loved clothes. And So, in spite of how painful it was, I'm just thinking to myself, well, you know, of course she's going to get another new outfit because this is Liz. But, I was just petrified because I thought, how am I going to be able to go out and pick out this outfit now in this state of mind that I'm in? And we never agreed on clothing. And, you know, and I literally said, you know, Liz, you have got to help me here because I have absolutely no idea what to pick. And so my sister and I went to a store that Liz used to work at, because I knew she liked the clothes there. And I sort of had an idea in my mind what I was looking for, but I really wasn't sure. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go in and I'm going to walk around and hopefully I will figure it out. And it only took a few minutes. And I picked out a pair of khaki pants and a light blue sweater, and I thought, well, this is it. I showed it to my sister, and I said, you know, I don't know if this is what Liz wants, but, you know, really, I don't think it matters. And so that's what I went with. And a few days later, my sister-in-law said to me, you know, Kim, I was going through pictures last night, and I found a picture of Liz from our last Christmas gathering, and you know that she was wearing a pair of khaki pants and a light blue sweater. And I, when she told me that, I just thought, oh, that's good. I think I got it right. But then a few months later, it just, the light bulb came on, and I went, oh, my gosh, that was really my first sign that, you know, she really did help me pick out that outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a visitation at the funeral home, and one of her closest high school friends came through, and she hugged me, and then she sort of stepped back, and she looked me right in the eye, and she said, Kim, I just want you to know that Liz has come to me and let me know that she's okay. And I said, oh, Cassie, you know, thank you for telling me that. And, of course, I wanted to ask her a million questions, but at that point, I really couldn't. And a couple of days later, she was at my house, and we were standing in my kitchen, and I said, Cassie, you know, please tell me what happened when you got that message from Liz. And she said, you know, I can't explain it. I was driving around in my car, and I was just thinking of all the memories I had with her, and suddenly she was just there. I couldn't see her, but I could feel her. And she just said to me, Cassie, you don't have to worry about me. I'm okay. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. And I, you know, I was so grateful to her because I realized how, you know, she must have struggled on whether she should have told me that or not, because, you know, not everyone believes that, but she was brave enough to tell me, and I was so grateful. And then a day after the funeral, my mom was back at the cemetery, and she was standing, and Elizabeth was her oldest granddaughter, and she was standing at her grave, and she just said, you know, Liz, if you're okay, please give me a sign. And then she turned and walked away, and my parents just live a half a block away from the cemetery, and so she turned to walk back home. And at some point during that walk, two monarch butterflies just flew up right in front of her, seemingly out of nowhere. And my mom realized that that was her sign, because my mom was insistent that we needed to find butterflies and release butterflies at the cemetery as the last parting thing before we all left. And I thought it was a wonderful idea, but we couldn't figure out where to find butterflies. But my mom went on the internet and found a company in California that could supply us butterflies, and she had them ordered, and she had them delivered in time for the funeral. And I, you know, I considered that to be a miracle as well, because my mom is elderly, and she has a really hard time dealing with computers when she's having a good day. So the fact that she could get on there when she was, you know, so distraught was amazing as well. And so, and she made the connection that, you know, the butterfly was her symbol that her granddaughter was okay. And she told my sister, and then my sister told me, and I'm like, wow, you know, that's really cool.
This is so nice, because I've shared with a number of people and received testimonies from a number of people who've had messages given to them from butterflies. Butterflies are used a lot by people on the other side to convey messages. Oh, big time. And, you know, it's interesting because I've been through a tremendous amount of tragedy and loss in my life as well, including being a widow. And I just really have got to acknowledge the amazing strength that comes to a person who's dealing with so much loss and grief. You know, and I'm thinking of what you were able to accomplish, what your mom was able to accomplish. And it's just such a powerful testament to the power of the human spirit and of love to just rise above all adversity and to accomplish amazing feats. And sometimes they can be seemingly small feats, but they're also amazing when you look at it in light of the events that are going on at the time. So I think that's really wonderful. And another interesting comment about this too, you know, people wondering about whether or not to share the messages. And I've been through this because I'm a medium myself.
Mm-hmm.
And when an associate died or, you know, transitioned in Nashville, he just kept coming to me, giving me messages to convey to his wife, because he knew that I was a medium and a Reiki practitioner. And
So
I took the liberty to send an email to his wife about all of these beautiful, positive messages I was receiving from him. But somehow she, you know, I had to do a follow-up and say, did you receive the email? And she said, yes. And she said, but this really disturbed me. And even though it was very positive, it bothered her.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, dear. And now to this day, she doesn't keep in touch because I'm the bearer of messages, as it were. And I guess that she sees that as some kind of stigma or what have you. And it was interesting because her husband came to me another time and I said, lad, no more. I've already upset her.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes, and I thought that I was sensitive and intuitive enough to know whether or not that would have upset her. But before she seemed interested when I got something. But for some reason, this one time she did have a negative reaction, and I don't think it's that she didn't believe. I think that maybe it was still too hard for her to face the fact that her physical bed was now empty on the other side, and she didn't have his presence physically.
Sure.
And so, of course, you know, people go through a myriad of emotions and reactions to all of this, but I think it is good counsel for people to just really pray and probe and intuit whether or not it is time or appropriate to share a message, because we think, oh, the person's going to be very pleased to receive this message. And indeed, I thought that was the case. But in this one particular instance, no, it wasn't. She was a bit put off by it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's very hard to know. It's very hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's really interesting to note about that. So let's get on to some of the experiences that you started directly having from your daughter receiving.
Sure. Well, and the third experience that my husband had within that week is that, actually a week after the fire, they opened up the house and we could go in and salvage any possessions that we wanted to. And so he made a couple of trips up to the house and got a few things. And the second time when he was coming home, he was by himself, and he told me that he was thinking of, you know, what changes, you know, had happened this week. And, you know, he was, you know, devastated, as we all were. And he told me that he thought to himself, you know, I'm bringing her stuff home, but I wish I was bringing her home instead. And as he had that thought, he heard her voice, and she said, "I'm already home, Dad." And
oh.
And then, you know, my husband shared that with me, and he is not a big believer in all of this kind of thing. So the fact that he shared that with me and said, you know, that was my sign for my daughter, was very amazing. And so, and I'm thinking, well, gee, you know, this is great, Liz. You know, three signs within a week. You know, none of them were for me, but that was fine. I knew about them, and I remember saying to her, you know, this is really great, but I'm not ready yet for anything. But when I am, I'll let you know. And proceeded to try to, you know, get on with life. And I went back to work. And on the one-month anniversary of her death, October 20th, I couldn't go to work. I was just so sad. And I stayed home and was home throughout the day and read through all the sympathy cards we had received, and I was working on thank you notes, and had a few good cries, and my younger daughter came home from school, and my husband came home from work, and we had supper, and after supper, my husband and my daughter went off to download some pictures in our computer room, and I cleaned up the kitchen, and I remember putting the last dish in the cupboard, and as I just shut the cupboard door, our smoke alarm went off. And it was so loud, and I, you know, usually you can tell what part of the house it's coming from, but I could not tell. So I immediately ran downstairs to our family room and each of the girls' bedrooms, and there was no smoke, there was no fire anywhere, and still this alarm was just blaring. So I ran back upstairs, and I ran to the laundry room and the kitchen and the dining room and the living room, and I was halfway down the hall to the bedroom, and the alarm just quit. And I just stopped short in the hallway, and I thought, well, that was weird. Our alarms have never gone off like that. And then I stood there, and I could hear my husband and my daughter in the computer room, and they were just talking away. And I thought, well, why didn't they come out and figure out what was going on? And then it just dawned on me that, oh, my gosh, they didn't hear that. And then about just a second later, I went, oh, my, that was Liz. You know, she died in a fire, and on the one-month anniversary, she set off the smoke alarm, and I'm the only one that heard it.
That is so interesting, too, and those things are just excruciatingly loud. They are painful to listen to.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, wow, I can't believe this. And I'm like, okay, you know. I didn't even have to ask, and she sent me a sign, and I got it, and this was really great. And a couple of days later, I thought, okay, well, I bet this means that she's going to give me a sign on the 20th of every month. So that made perfect sense to me. So about a week before November 20th, I thought, okay, I'm ready, Liz. I'm ready for another sign on November 20th, and I told her that every day for a week. And I waited and waited on November 20th for something to happen, and absolutely nothing happened. And I thought, well, I guess that was wrong. That's not going to be how it is. And the next day was just a regular day. It was Friday, November 21st, and it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I was downstairs where I usually am at that time, and I was laying on my couch. I had fallen asleep, and for some reason, I just woke up, and I grabbed the TV remote, and I changed the channel. And I remember doing without even thinking about it. I had no idea why I did it, but I did. And when I did, the news was on, and they were showing a cemetery scene, and they zoomed in on this gravesite, and there was a wind chime at that gravesite, and it was exactly like the wind chime we had at Liz's grave. And I thought, ooh, that's interesting. And I thought, I have to watch the story because I wonder what it is. And I watched it, and it was a story about a woman who lived in Minneapolis that's only about 50 miles away from me, and she could communicate with people who had died. And they showed her in a room with like three or four other people, and she went to each person, and she gave them very specific information about their loved one. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And then I went to bed, and I woke up the next morning, and I thought, did that really happen? I didn't even know this woman's name. I thought, did I dream that? So I went on my computer, and I went on the website of the television station to try and find who this woman was and find out, see if I could see that story again. And I could not find anything on the story. But what I found was the email address of the reporter that had done the story. So I thought, okay, I'm going to send her an email. So I did, and I told her, you know, who I was, and I told her that my daughter was one of the U of M students who had died in that house fire a couple of months ago. And I had seen her story last night about this woman who speaks to the dead. And did she know if this woman did this for regular people? And if so, how could I contact her? And I sent off the email, and I went back a couple of hours later, and I already had a reply. And the reporter was, her name was Randy Kay. She now works for CNN. And she, you know, said, oh, I'm so sorry. I remember that fire. And she proceeded to tell me that this woman's name was Catherine Harwig, and she was sure that she would see me. And she went on to tell me that she had actually gone to Catherine to talk to her father, who had committed suicide. And her session with Catherine had been so helpful. And so she gave me Catherine's personal email address. And so I thought, okay. And I was just, this wasn't easy, an easy process to do this. I was scared out of my wits, but I knew I had to do it. And so it took me a couple of days to get up the courage to send an email to Catherine. But I did, and I thought, I'm not going to tell her much of all anything. So I just said, you know, I've lost someone really close to me. Do you do readings for people? And I sent it off, and she responded very quickly as well, and she said, you know, I'm very sorry for your loss. Yes, I do readings for people, and I have a website, and that'll give you all the information that you need. So I immediately went to her website, and when you go to her website, the first thing that comes up is sort of a little mini biography on her, and I started to read it. And when I got done, I just about fell out of my chair because there were so many similarities between her and my daughter. Their college majors had both been psychology and sociology. Catherine had also gone to the University of Minnesota to get her master's in criminal justice, and she had worked for many years supervising dangerous criminals. And my daughter's career goal was to become a criminal psychologist and work with dangerous criminals. And I could never figure out why she wanted to do that. But she had wanted to do that for about 3 or 4 years. And I had never met or heard of anyone else that ever worked with dangerous criminals until I read that on Catherine's website. And I just thought, this is a huge validation that my daughter is in on this. And she will come through for me. And she did.
Now, let me ask you this. What caused you to be afraid? You know, when you said you were scared out of your wits.
Well, because I was a grieving mother, and I was already in lots of pain, and I thought, I do not want to think, you know, I don't want to set up any false hope, because if I get up there and this really isn't real, I need to be able to pick myself up off the floor and figure out how I can still go on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the scariest thing I've ever had to do, but I knew I had to do it. I had to take that chance because I love my daughter so much And if there's any way that I can communicate with her, I will do whatever it takes. And so I went. A friend came with me and drove me up there, and I was just shaking in my boots, but I rang her doorbell, and she came to the door, and she opened the door, and we walked in and sat down, and the minute I sat on her couch, every anxiety that I had immediately left, and I was so relaxed, and Catherine just started to talk, and she told me things that there's no way she could have known other than from Liz. And she described Liz's, the way she died. She described her personality perfectly. And Liz was driving her crazy. She was dancing and running around, and she said, "I'm so happy to be in spirit. I love it here. And yes, I died, but so what?"
Yeah, I could see her doing that, too.
Yes.
I really could.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that sounds exactly like something Liz would say. So yeah. I knew there was no doubt that she was talking to my daughter. And it was just the most amazing experience.
You know, I wanted to add the comment, too, because I'm sure people will go through all these varying thoughts and you know, it really is natural, quite natural, in fact, and quite all right to grieve when somebody we love transitions.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing at all wrong with that, but what we also need to remember to do is to celebrate for the individual who has transitioned, because we're the ones who are stuck, not the ones who have moved on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, again, it's perfectly all right to grieve because, you know, we're going to miss connecting via
yes.
that form.
What we're really grieving is the loss of their physical presence.
Right, exactly. And yet, if we can also remember to selflessly celebrate for the individual who has transitioned because, well, at least according to my experiences now, it's much more pleasant on the other side,
oh, yes. Yes.
As a rule, than it is on this plane. And so I'm not surprised that she would be dancing and doing a happy reel right about now with these changes. And I also get the sense that she's quite the go-getter. She's quite the doer. She's the busybody. She's always got to be busy, but she also needs to be appreciated for everything that she does.
Yeah, very much so.
And acknowledged. And so she's still doing that, and I still feel her very much in that mindset, but in a happy way.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
In a very happy way. So she's going to continue to, well, I was having this fun vision of knocking down doors and moving mountains. So.
Oh, yeah.
and I just feel energetically that's the kind of powerful spirit she is, and I wouldn't be surprised if she actually got you to wake up with a start in your sleep, also wanting to bear a message. If this hasn't happened already,
well,
I think it could do.
Yeah, she's come to me in dreams 3 or 4 times. And those are also very, very interesting because when they happen, it's like I'm dreaming, but yet I'm a participant, and I can think and reason when things are going on. And when she comes, she comes, and we're always in some room in our house, and we're just doing normal, everyday things. And she doesn't say a whole lot, but she's just there, and she just looks, you know, radiant and lovely. And the last one I had was actually a little over a year ago now, and in that particular one, I had fallen asleep again downstairs on our couch, and that's exactly where I was when the dream was going on, and my younger daughter was also in my dream sitting on the floor, and Liz just walked in looking very, she would be 25 now, she looked very mature, she had on this very light blue kind of a pantsuit, and her hair was a little bit shorter, and she just proceeded to walk over to Anna, and she just started to give her all this kind of sisterly advice, and I don't even remember what she said because I was just sitting there looking at her, and it felt so natural that she was there, and it didn't even really occur to me that you know, hey, she's dead. This is a big deal. So I just sat and watched her talk to her sister, and she got done saying whatever she needed to say, and then she just turned around and walked up steps and was just gone. And then after she was gone, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a big deal because, you know, she's dead. And so in my dream, I kept saying to my younger daughter, Anna, you know, Anna, you know, did you see this? Did you hear what Liz said? And I kept trying to get her to tell me what Liz was wearing so that I knew that Anna had seen the same thing I did. And Anna would not tell me, and I was very, very frustrated. Then the dream just sort of ended. But I just thought, oh, my gosh. And, you know, as soon as that happens and then I wake up, I'm like, oh, wow, it was another visit. And it's so cool because we're so close. But then it's just like, ooh, she's here and then she's gone again, you know, and that's a little bit hard. But I'll take those dreams anytime.
Boy, I share that too when I pick up on people I love who are on the other side or on the other side of the planet, which is often the case as well. And, you know, sometimes I don't even get a visual. I could just be busy doing something and I will feel the presence of someone in my space so strongly, and I've got to literally stop and just be with that person. And
yeah.
Lately I've been getting the late husband a lot, so that's interesting, and I always pay attention when somebody's coming around and to also be aware of the energy, the mood of the individual when he or she, you know, shows up and that kind of thing. And the dreams can often be very lucid, or, as I said, you could just be doing something and then all of a sudden you will be aware of yourself being enveloped by, for example, Liz.
Uh-huh.
And she does feel like, I'm getting the word advocate. She's an advocate. She really wants to help people, and I see her as an educator. So I wouldn't be surprised if she was going about in different dimensions, being an advocate and an educator and a source of support for different people, and especially helping young people.
Yes.
Is the kind of energy that I'm getting around her.
Very much so. My sense about her was that this has been a while now, but she was going to help new souls that had just sort of crossed over, into make the transition and that type of thing. And so what you're saying is right on. She very
That's
much
excellent.
Is doing that.
Yes, because that is needed too. And indeed, it is referred to as the intake period.
Uh-huh.
And when a soul initially crosses over, one needs to go through an adjustment period, integrating everything that happened in the previous life, and then going into a rest period.
Right.
It's very interesting how all of that works out. So, and I just feel her a real strong presence. In fact, I get the sense that a few lifetimes she's done this type of thing. You know, looking
sure.
after people, even doing healing work and that
sure.
sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I wanted to ask you, too, have you had any other sensations? I know you said that you haven't, had a dream for a while, but have you had any other experiences that you perceive could be Liz in your presence?
Well, just last week. Another really interesting thing, when I told you that September 19th, 2003, when Liz went to that hockey game, she called our house and left a message on our answering machine thanking us for the tickets that we had given her. And my husband and I were actually out of town up north on a fishing trip with my parents. And I really wrestled with whether I should tell Liz that we were going to go up north, because I thought, well, I don't think I will, because if I do, she might decide to bring her friends home and have a party at our house, and I didn't really want that. So I thought, you know what, I'm not even going to tell her that we're going to go up north, and she doesn't need to know. She's up at school, and so we'll go up north and we'll come home, and she's never going to know the difference. And then after we came home, after learning of the fire on September 20th, and we walk into the house, and of course we press the answering machine, and And here's a message from Liz from the night before, you know, hi, Mom, this is Liz. I'm at the game, and, you know, these tickets you gave me are really awesome. So thanks a lot. Bye. And, you know, we thought, oh, my God, this is amazing, and we don't want to lose that message of our daughter's voice from our answering machine. So we recorded it, and it's recorded now on our computer. And I have it in with all of my music. And I have over 100 pieces of music that my ritual in the morning is I like to get up early and make coffee, and I go on the computer and I listen to music, and I check emails, and I play Spider Solitaire, and that's how I start my day, and I love it. And so it was actually September 19th, 2008, and I remember waking up that morning, and I thought, wow, and I thought back to 5 years ago, and I thought about, you know, where I was, and I was up north, and I thought about Liz, and I thought about that message that she left on her answering machine, and I thought, you know, that really hasn't played for quite a while. And then I got up, and I got my coffee, and I went onto the computer, and I turned on my music, and songs started to play, and I played a couple games of Spider Solitaire, and then I thought, well, I'm going to check my email, and so I went in, and I opened up my email, and I had a wonderful email from Monique, who was Liz's first year college roommate, and she was also a roommate, lived in the house with Liz, but was not there on that particular night of the fire. And she has moved to Chicago now and is going to grad school. And we, and on the anniversary or around the anniversary, we always get together with the other families, Brian and Amanda's families that died with Liz. We get together and honor and remember them and celebrate their lives. And so I had this wonderful email from Monique saying that, you know, I'm really sorry, but I'm in Chicago now and I'm not going to be able to come back. But she said, I just want you to know that I think about Liz every single day, and she's the reason that I'm going to grad school and that I'm going for psychology, because she knew how important psychology was for people and how much it could help people. And as soon as I read that, Liz's message clicked on and started to play. And I just smiled and I just laughed, because I knew that that was Liz checking in with me. But not only that, she wanted me to let Monique know that she knew and was so proud and happy that she was going on with her life in such a wonderful way, and that she loved her and missed her just as much as Monique loves and misses her. And so then I immediately sent another email to Monique and said, Monique, this is what happened, and you need to take this message and believe that it's true.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh,
yeah.
That is so wonderful.
Yeah.
Did she respond?
No, she didn't. But, you know, she just has to, everybody has to sort of absorb this kind of information, you know, like you said,
right,
previously, at their own pace. And so it's there for her, and she just can do whatever she needs to do.
That's really such tremendous. This has been such a powerful testimony, everything that you've been through. So what are you doing now? We've got just a few more minutes here. What are you, are you doing some special work? Do you do speaking engagements or what have you? Or?
Yeah, I do. There's going to be a Women in Spirituality Expo in Mankato, Minnesota, which is just about 40 miles from me, and I'll be putting on a little a workshop there. I call it From Tragedy to Transformation, A Mother's Story. And
that's
I just cool. Basically share everything that I've just, and a little bit more, with people, because I really want people to know that, you know, death is not the end of a relationship. It just changes it. And, you know, I really believe that when people die and they cross over, they want nothing more than to communicate to us that they are okay. And I think they try very hard right at first to get that message across. And when you get it and then you respond back to them, then they keep it going. You know, I mean, I can't say that I get a message from Liz every day, every month, or even, you know, I have no idea when she's going to pop in, but I've gotten so much from her. I've learned not to put any expectations. It's better just to let her come through whenever she wants to.
Yes, good point.
Because otherwise you set yourself up for disappointment. Basically, you can't just say, well, you know, I remember when my parents were having their 50th anniversary, and I said, you know, Liz, if you could just, we were going to have a family gathering, and I said, you know, if you could just send two butterflies, one butterfly to this gathering, we would all know that it's you, and I wouldn't have to say a word. You know, please do this. Please do this. Well, she didn't. And I was rather upset. But, you know, that was kind of my lesson, that I can't tell her what to do anymore. I mean, I couldn't really tell her what to do when she was here, and I still can't tell her what to do either. She just does what she does. But, you know, that's okay. And what she's done for me is simply marvelous. And, you know, I know that our connection will always be there, and it will never go away. And, you know, there's so many hurting and grieving people that just, for whatever reason, they just don't see those signs or messages that their loved ones are trying to give them. So if there's anything that I can ever do, you know, to tell my story and just say, you know, it's there for everybody. I'm not some special person that's set apart from everybody else, because if this can happen to me, this can happen to absolutely everybody else on the planet.
Well, actually, I've got a friend who's been on my radio show, Josie Varga.
Yeah.
Who's written a book, Visit from Heaven. And so, you know, it's all about AD season. In fact, she's inviting people, or maybe I should say she was. I don't know if she still is. Maybe she still is. I'm just going to say she still is. Because she's been working on this, and she might be doing the finishing touches on it now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and she specifically wanted those testimonies, experiences that have been validated.
Right.
Or verified, what have you. And I'm in there. So, you know, I'm really, really excited that this kind of information is circulating a lot more now. And another point that I wanted to make really quickly, responding to your statement about, you know, people on the other side, really, especially at first, wanting and trying desperately to reach people, this is true. And indeed, it can be very, very frustrating. And in the ears, you know, we do it, trying to get somebody's attention, and also not realizing necessarily that our bodies have died and we're still acting as if everything is the same. And then we realize, oh my goodness, this is a different form. I'm not in my physical body, and people can't even tell that I'm trying to speak to them.
Right.
So there is that frustration, and I think it is good that immediately upon someone's transitioning, one needs to just be very aware but relaxed. In fact, as I've given lessons to people teaching them how to become mediums, I always say you relax into it. It's not something where you do a lot of concerted effort. It's about relaxing, because that's
yeah.
what enables us to receive the input.
Right.
The other point that I wanted to make, from being on the other side a number of times, that we are not really, well, I should say most people, according to my experience and research, are not aware of time-space. So in other words, for example, when I flatlined on my birthday, I didn't know it was my quote-unquote birthday, because I just was in another dimension where that really doesn't mean anything.
Right.
So you could be expecting your daughter to show up or do something on 20th September, but from the other side, that really isn't going to have meaning, because there is no time-space as we do it here on this plane.
Right, that's right, yeah.
So don't take anything personally if something doesn't
no.
happen according to that.
Oh, know? Right. Well, and the other thing, too, is, you know, they do not spend their time sitting watching what we do. They have
exactly.
marvelous new lives, and, you know, I think there comes a point when they just sort of give up on their loved ones if they don't get the messages, and think, well, you know, I can't just sit here and wait for them to get it. I have other things to do and learn and grow, and so they're off on their marvelous, you know, living their marvelous new life, and, you know, do occasionally check in, but then they're off doing their thing, just like, you know, we're here, you know, doing ours.
I think that this is really exciting when people are now becoming more aware of the fact that we are interdimensional beings living in a multiverse.
Right.
And so when someone transitions out of this plane, you can be sure that that individual is going to be very, very busy.
Yes.
And there's going to be a lot to do, still a lot to learn, a lot to heal, and that kind of thing.
Right.
So I'm pleased that you made that point that people are not just sitting waiting for a loved one to pull on them and say, come and visit us, please, for tea.
Yeah.
He's ready, you know.
Yep, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and at the same time, another interesting thing that can happen is that somebody can indeed be busy on the other side and then all of a sudden become aware of Mum is tugging at me. Okay,
right.
I think I'll go check in with Mum.
Right, right.
So this, you know, with the telepathy, and that's why I try to make this point, I just gave a presentation, a workshop on telepathy earlier this month at the Edgar Cayce ARE Center in Virginia Beach, and I refer to it as your T-mail. Have you checked your T-mail lately? That's the telepathic mail.
Sure.
And the interesting with that is that it happens two ways. Of course, you can pick up on your daughter or just a friend who's still on this plane. You could be busy at work or whatever, and then all of a sudden you feel this wave come over you. Indeed, pay attention to that and acknowledge it and believe in it, because it's absolutely real that that individual is reaching out to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I believe that everyone has the ability to be intuitive.
Absolutely,
they just have
yes.
to, you know, pay attention and believe that it's possible.
And that, again, that is an innate part of our makeup. We are all psychic. We are all
yes.
intuitive. We are all visionaries.
Yep.
We've unfortunately been conditioned out of it. So what we're doing now is having to unlearn so many things that have been blocking us all of these years, because it is very natural to communicate with people on the other side or people on the other side of the planet. And in fact, I was also mentioning that our invisible friends that we have as children are real entities that are
yes.
on the other side.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because there's a consistency about the connection that is made with the invisible friend. There's also a consistency with the essence. The essence is the same.
Right.
So this is really, really tremendous work, and you know, I'm just going to be honest here. There's going to be a lot of people transitioning here in the next several months, years, and so I don't think that we can ever share too much information about this and how
no.
important it is that people know, really know, that our friends and loved ones can never be away from us except in our own thinking.
Right, correct.
And I really commend you for this work that you're doing. And I think that you put that on your blog the other day, didn't you? You said something wonderful happened, and that's when all of a sudden your daughter, you heard her voicemail message whilst you were working on the computer. This was a few days ago, I believe.
Right, yes, uh-huh.
Why don't you share with our listeners what your website is, Jeff?
Sure. It's Kim Wenzel, and that's K-I-M. WENCL.wordpress.com.
Okay, and this is the only website you've got, I take it. Is that correct?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. And, well, let's back up. Starting this evening, that won't be the only website you've got, because you'll have your own page on towardthelight.org, towardthelight.org/Kimberly Wenzel is what I put, K-I-M-B-E-R-L. Y-W-E-N-C-L, and yes, I did correct the spelling of your name. So, and that's wonderful. The book is on there. Do you want to tell people how they can get hold of that book so they can read? And I take it that these are these testimonies of ADCs by bereaved parents or just anyone who's had a friend or loved one cross over?
Yeah, anyone who's had a friend or loved one crossed over. And
okay.
if they're interested in the book, they could get it at either Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, or there is a website, messagesfrombeyond.com, that you can order it from as well.
Okay. Now, are there dashes between the words, or is it just written out as one word, messages from beyond?
I believe there's dashes between the words. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's really wonderful. It's been wonderful having you with us for this transmission of Toward the Light, and I'm so pleased that you joined us. This is a very powerful message, and I hope that people will look at the book and read your testimonies and articles as you place them on your blog. We've been speaking with Kimberly Wenzel, and she has got a wonderful daughter and still has. She's just in a different form now, who transitioned on the 20th September of back in 2003. So this has been an amazing testimony about the communications that have occurred between not only Kimberly, but other people and her daughter, Liz. So definitely you want to check out the website and also check out towardthelight.org/KimberlyWenzel.html for more information. Next week we are going to have Rick Madison. He is somebody who died in a car wreck in Nashville, Tennessee, and was revived more by spirit than anything else. So this is going to be a very interesting show. He'll be on next week. And then I want to make a special announcement. On the 12th of October, this is going to be a very special two-hour broadcast of Toward the Light featuring David Icke, Kathy O'Brien, Mark Phillips, and Alfred Weber. We're going to be discussing HAARP, H-A-A-R-P. Again, that's going to be 12th October, so you definitely won't want to miss that broadcast of Toward the Light. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Love and light to all of you. We will speak to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light.